Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 in association with bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and hopefully joining me on the phone now, I have Ella Brocklebank.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Hi, Ella. How are you?
I'm very well indeed, thank you. Yourself?
I'm okay. I'm having a bit of a panic in the studio here. There's things going off all over the place. People are sending me messages and stuff. Of course, I'm the only one here, so I'm trying to answer the messages and mess about. But I'm there. I'm fine. I'm good.
Good.
and I'm even more made up that you've managed to join us, because I really do appreciate it, because you've had a busy day today. You've been a radio star all day today.
I don't know about star, but yes, it has been a busy day. So, yeah, this morning on BBC Radio Kent, which was great, just to get again views across from the construction industry and us here at Denner in what we've been doing throughout the ongoing pandemic. Mm. And now a pleasure to talk to you this afternoon again. It's been a little while.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, normally when we talk to you, you have your partner in crime, Cheryl Coursebrook, is normally with you.
You took the words right out of my mouth, with partner in crime, absolutely, yes. Or my wing woman or sidekick or whatever we refer to her. But yes, I'm normally with Cheryl, so, but flying solo today.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it's a shame. We always like to talk to both of you, but we can only kind of handle one phone call at a time here, thankfully. I don't think I could cope with any more. I'm not your multitasking kind of person.
If you're having one of those days, it's probably best you just stick with me today.
I would have thought so. I think that's very true. So, as you said, Ella, you're Business Development Manager for Jenner Group, a long, long established Kent construction company. You're also the co-chair of the Kent Women in Business, Kent Women Construction Group as well.
Yes, yep, correct.
Cool. Now, so give us a run through. I know that Jenner's closed down their business for a few weeks. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct, Paul. So following when we had the announcement from the government on the 23rd of March, we felt that the message coming from the Prime Minister was very clear. It was to lock down, it was to stay safe. And then within a few hours, we sort of had quite conflicting messages, again, coming from government, saying that construction should keep going. And that was a difficult one for us, really, because first and foremost, it's about safety. As you say, a very long-standing business, it's about our duty of care to all those we're responsible for. So we just made the call, really, that at that moment in time, we felt it best to temporarily close whilst we just took stock and made sure we had all the right processes and procedures in place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And do you know what? I couldn't agree more. You know, it's, it wasn't just whether, government wanted you to keep going or not. It's whether you feel comfortable and whether your staff and colleagues and customers feel comfortable as well, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And that's the important thing. And as you say, getting things in place to enable you to open up again when the time's right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a moral call, really, isn't it? It's about being able to sleep at night, knowing that you have done everything within your power to keep your people safe. And for us as a construction company, it's not about just about those that we directly employ. It's about our wider supply chain as well. So we had to make sure that they too had all the right processes and procedures in place to make sure that they and their staff would also be safe when working on our behalf.
Yeah, I'm sorry about this, Ella. I've got a really stupid question that's just come in on Twitter. You can guess from my tone who asked it. It's the toilet queen herself, Jill Serkin. Mm-hmm. And she said, how do you manage with toilets on site?
Okay, that's an interesting one. We've not been not been thrown at us as yet. But I mean, it's any welfare facilities, really. We've just had to make sure that we're utilising all available space now that we are back operational. We've just had to make sure that we have heightened hygiene and cleaning processes in place, more so than ever, and using all available facilities. Meeting rooms now turned into additional welfare spaces, really, because we're not holding holding face-to-face meetings. So anything like that, really, we've just had to do our best and, and do what we feel is right, really, just to make sure we are maintaining heightened safety standards and keeping all our sites clean.
Of course. And of course, I think what people don't always think about that work outside these industries when you're looking at this, it could be radically different because it all depends what you're working on. You know,
absolutely.
You know, there's a
just going back to your toilet point, actually, though. It's a very good point that Jules makes, though, because at the start of this pandemic, when we were all, everyone was out there panic buying, it's naturally, though, you've got to make sure you've got the right supplies on site as well. So that was a concern at one point, but luckily they locked down on that and stopped the panic buying. So we've been all right, so. But it actually is quite a serious consideration.
It is, isn't it? And but again, you know, in line with what I was just saying, it's it depends on what, you know, construction's a big industry and you build all kinds of things and you work in all kinds of environments and under all kinds of circumstances. So it isn't a one size fits all by any stretch of the imagination.
No. And we did give due consideration to could we keep certain sites open, would some have to close? But it was just an across the board decision, really. We just felt, no, it's absolutely best until we are absolutely confident in our process and procedures and heightened safety advice that actually all should stop, really, you know, regardless of whether we're, you know, enabling works, groundworks in a large open space or whether we're and in the final stages of a building product. That's when the most risks come into play. But it was just felt that it was best for us to just make that decision across the board.
Absolutely. So are you opening up now? Are you planning to open up soon?
Yes, we are actually. I think what in our self-imposed closure and preempting any further guidance from the government in closing, which was on the 25th of March, that's actually given us a lot of time that some businesses now don't have in the recent guidance that's come from the government. So we have had that time to make sure that we're well prepared, that we're planned, that, you know, all signage is up, you know, social distancing guidance is clearly marked out on site. So we've kind of had the benefit of a few extra weeks, really, in making that decision to close, to prepare ourselves, where I think a lot of businesses at the moment are in a bit of a state of panic where we're now being told to return, and they're not actually prepared or in a position to safely do so. So we decided to once we felt ready and confident to do so, to start reopening our sites a very phased manner, really. We opened a number of sites on the 27th. Further sites followed last Monday, and our final site opened yesterday. So now we are, back fully operational.
Okay. And is everyone coming back to work, or are you phasing that in? Are there only certain trades to start with, or how are you working?
It's very phased. Again, each site is kind of addressed on an individual basis. So we're going through each site very methodically and making sure that we have got, because it comes down to, again, available materials and supply chain. So it's a very phased, gradual process. We're probably sort of about 50-60% productivity. So, and by all means, you know, we're not at a full capacity in terms of staff at all. We've just brought back the right level of people we need to return to that level of productivity that the materials and supply chain allows at the moment.
Yeah. I was talking to Joanne Taylor from Fit for Trade, the fenestration training company, earlier, and she made a point, and I just kind of want to put this to you, that even though people are returning to work, sometimes there's not a lot they can do because the supplies just aren't there. You know, like people haven't been making windows and doors and frames and presumably bricks and roof tiles and all the rest of it. So there's going to be a whole time period while everybody else gets back to work and starts producing the equipment that you need.
Absolutely, yes. We're kind of at the hands of our suppliers, really, and we're building merchants when they were shut. know, we had some sites which probably had sort of 2 weeks left of mortar on site, and when that's gone, you know, no matter how many bricks you've got, you can't really move forward. So
yep.
we absolutely, and that was part of our process where we were assessing each site individually in terms of where we could maintain short social distancing, social priority in terms of for society, whether they were specific medical centres that could soon benefit the communities, but also, yes, in terms of those projects that we could get supplies to. And again, that's all dependent on the stage that they were at in construction.
Yeah. When you look at social media and news outlets and all the rest of it, and people talk about all of these things in such glib terms, the fact is that life's complicated, isn't it? And business is complicated, and there's lots of things that have to happen in order for something else to happen. And I don't think people have fully appreciated just what an interconnected web the economy is, and how many things depend on other things, you know. And it's not just having construction back working, it's having transport back working, and you know, because if you can't get things to a site or away from a site, then you can't do anything. There's just so many things. I mean, as far as your organisation is concerned, have you adopted something like an overall project manager for something like this, or is it a team thing? How do you work it?
Straight away, as soon as the virus was kicking in, we established what we sort of know as our COVID-19 task force, which was a collection of representatives across the business, directors, our chief buyer, myself in terms of communications, our HR manager, and we formed that task force pretty rapidly, really, just to make sure that we were then assessing every area of the business and making sure we were guiding the business forward as best we could, really representing all aspects of the business. So that's been really key, actually, and very, very helpful in helping us plan our way forward and get back to activity on site.
Yeah, and because it's a massive logistical exercise, and it does need a lot of planning. You're absolutely right. So over the next few weeks, you're going to be opening up again and gradually returning to work and carrying on with fantastic stuff you're doing. Before this hit, and yourself and Cheryl came on the show a few months ago, and we were talking about things from a pretty different point of view then, before the pandemic hit. We were looking at the crisis that construction especially, but lots of industries, were facing with skill shortages and things like that. Have you got any views, Ella, on how you see things panning out over the next year or so in terms of how you think construction as a general industry is going to be?
Yeah, I think, again, nobody wants to be pessimistic, but I think, it's going to have long-lasting effects on the industry as a whole. I mean, it's just, as you say, this was never expected. We're some unprecedented times. I mean, we'd literally, I think we were kind of thinking to ourselves, Craigie, we've just come out of, you know, we've been through recession. I mean, Brexit, I think everyone misses Brexit now, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. That was it. Brexit was easy compared to this.
Absolutely. And we got through that, and then we sort of had been through a winter of quite incumbent weather, much rain on site, and we were just thinking, right, the sun's shining, we can push forwards. You know, for us, we've been in a very fortunate position to have a very strong forward order book, and have a lot of work secured and be very busy. And then, yes, a global pandemic hits that nobody is prepared for, and I don't think anyone would ever say they were, no matter what sort of business plans and you have in place. So I think it is gonna hit hard. I mean, everyone's gonna have to be assessing, you know, the effects of the pandemic in terms of programming on works. Things will take longer. There could be a loss of confidence that, you know, some projects don't go forward and naturally sort of push us back into recession, which is really disappointing, really. But, you know, we've been through it before. You've just got to ride the storm. But I just hope that it doesn't have the lasting negative ramifications for the industry, in that it doesn't deter young people from coming forward and considering it as a great career option, really. Sure. So I think it's now the time to really keep pushing and yeah, putting us in a positive light and how we're managing things, so that hopefully when we do get back to some form of normality, it will be able to encourage more people back to considering it as a good career choice.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I was talking not about construction, but about other industries, and I'm not trying to tar anybody with similar brushes. But I think industries like hospitality and healthcare and social care have always struggled with the perception of their industries in terms of bringing young people into the business. And I think the pandemic has changed that around quite a lot, because we've become totally dependent on those people.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you're right there. I was just thinking exactly the same thing. And actually, it's probably an opportunity to put a real positive spin. Like you say, you know, everybody's out clapping for their carers and showing huge respect for people who actually are you know, sometimes really struggling to get the pay that they deserve. And it's the same for construction.
Sure.
You know, now we are considered key workers. The government is strongly pushing us to move forward because of the importance of the industry. Let's take the positivity of that and actually say, no, this is an industry that's needed. There is job security. There is jobs for all. There's a huge array of opportunities available. So, yeah, maybe it is a good opportunity to be positive and take it forwards for the future.
Absolutely. I really do think that's going to be something that's going to cut through, is that people are going to reassess what is an important job and what isn't. You know, we can become very tired in terms of we look at things that pay well. Yeah. But, you know, it doesn't mean to say they're going to last. It doesn't mean to say they're important jobs, and it doesn't mean to say they're the kind of things that that suit you to do.
Yeah.
So I think there are positives that can come out of this in terms of that. And also, I just want to ask you if you've had any... Oh, you probably haven't had a chance to even think about this, so, you know, don't worry. But one of the things that's intriguing me, because of the kind of businesses that I own, is that things like work from home is going to be a thing from now on. You know, people have experienced it. Big corporates that said it would never work and the technology wouldn't work have now found that it does work. And there's been too many reports now that show that productivity increases when people work from home, you know, because they're saving commuting time. I guess that has an impact on the construction industry in terms of thinking about house building anyway, going forward, about whether we start thinking about constructing homes that do include workspace in them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've read a number of articles from architects, you know, actually say it's really made them stop and think about actually designing for the future, both in terms of that workspace, but also in terms of that, you know, safety and all those aspects. And, you know, workplaces, where you have got a bit more distance, etc., between your workstations, etc. So I think it's just a massive shift in thinking all around. And as you say, it's just new ways of working, really. For us as a construction company, yes, there is a high percentage of our staff who they can't work from home. They have to be out present on site doing their job. But for us here, even though we are back operational, our head office is at a bare minimum staff, really, just to keep ticking over, with the rest actively encouraged that, you know, to work remotely, because they can do so now. So I think it's going to be new, more efficient ways of working. You're not going to now drive two hours for perhaps a meeting where we might have in one of our sites in Sussex. That actually can be now done on video conferencing facilities very successfully. So
absolutely.
I think, again, there's some positives to come in, and it's made us think differently.
Absolutely. Ella, as always, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us. Give us a shout out for Jenna's website, and also, if you want, for the website for the Kent Women in Construction.
Yes, so our website is www.jenna-group.co.uk, and we do have a specific COVID-19 section on there, which covers all social distancing guidelines from the Construction Leadership Council, and all our policy statements that we've been issuing throughout this time. So if anyone's got any questions about our what we're doing, hopefully they'll find answers there and ways of getting in touch with us. And also, yes, in my role as co-chair with Cheryl of the Kent Construction Focus Group. That's a group that is part of the Kent and Victor Chamber of Commerce. We meet monthly, and we have had our first virtual meeting as well, which went very well.
Fantastic.
And we're always encouraging new members to that, so that is open to any business that's in the construction industry and in Kent. So it's about coming together as a team and working together for local opportunity, really, and best practice. So, and again, more details on that can be found at kcfg.co.uk, and the Kent Women in Business is a kind of an offshoot of that, really, and that's kind of in its infancy, but again, just encouraging women to come together and considering construction as a career opportunity as well.
Fabulous. Fantastic. Ella, thank you so much. Do stay safe.
We look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you for joining us.
Be back in the studio before we know it, Paul, and I'll bring Cheryl in with me.
Yeah, absolutely. The terrible two. Yeah.
Terrible two. We'll be back together before too long. But thanks for having me on, Paul.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you, Ella. Cheers
now.
Thank
you.
Bye.
Bye.
Ella Brocklebank there from Jenner Group Construction. Right, we've got an interview to play with Jules Serkin now. We zoomed together and had a chat about the Prime Minister and the government's response to the very minor gradual unlocking. Have a listen.
This is Channel 2.
So I'm zooming in now with the lovely Paul Andrews, and it's a week since we spoke, isn't it, properly?
It is. We're in week 8 of lockdown now.
And I think we're all managing pretty well, but it has been a bit dramatic last night with Boris Johnson's announcement on Sunday.
Yeah.
I've just been talking to my builder, actually, and he, because people on Twitter are not happy, a lot of them, but you get that on Twitter, don't you, and any social media. There's always going to be lots. But he said he finds it all fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
He works for himself. He's very safe, he says, when he goes anywhere, because he's aware of his family at home. He worked for a lady all last week. He put a floor down in her kitchen and she hid in the bedroom the whole time.
Yeah.
Like a little mole.
Yeah.
He washes his hands. He's not coughing. He's got no symptoms. And he's just come round today to paint my kitchen.
Right.
Before COVID, the plan was that we'd have Gavin's birthday, my new husband.
Yeah.
And
your wedding anniversary.
And our wedding anniversary, thank you for remembering. And fly off to Spain so that Adrian, the builder, could have the whole kitchen to himself and we could be sitting on the beach, you know, relaxed. But, of course, that hasn't happened. So I've just been in to do a coffee, a pre-Zoom coffee. Thank you to the coffee shop. Do you remember them?
Yep.
Coffee shop.
Yep.
Lovely Liz and Andy. And they sent me some gorgeous coffee. So I just went in and said to him, because he's got it all dusted over with his little dust cloths.
Yep.
So I said, oh, do you mind if I just pulled all his dust cloths off to do my coffee on the hob, as you do? So I'm really disrupting him. But as you know, I can be quite disruptive.
I don't doubt that one minute.
So... what were your thoughts, Paul Andrews? Did you watch it live at 7 p.m?
Yeah, I did. I'm going to have a little rant now because I'm really, really fed up with it all now. And you're right about Twitter. I did watch it. I did understand mostly what he was saying. I did have some questions that arose out of what he was saying. But I've been absolutely disgusted with what I've seen on social media today, especially Sky News. Sky News have been appalling.
What were they saying? Because I haven't seen...
Well, they posted a picture of the Tube this morning saying this is what Boris Johnson has caused. But, of course, if you looked at the Tube any morning over the last 2 months, it was packed. It's been packed 2 months.
Yeah, they've been putting photos of it being packed every day since lockdown.
So,
and also, Boris Johnson hasn't caused it. He asked people not to travel by public transport, didn't he?
My take on this is people are being very political... and very stupid, and I don't think that's the right approach with what we're facing here. And I think people are treating it as a game. And it's not. It's deadly serious. It's deadly serious what we're going through. And to play, and I'm not picking on one side here. Both sides are as bad as each other. They keep playing politics with this, and I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the politics because, and the media have been the worst, as far as I'm concerned. There's been no focus from the media on anything sensible. it's all gotcha stuff, and it's all, I don't know what alert means, and, you know, and you say, oh, for God's sake.
Yeah.
For me, there's a huge discussion to be had. The government needs to be held to account over what it's doing and what problems that we're facing. And there's a huge discussion to be had about how we actually do unlock this. But right at the moment, the country, like on most things, is split 50-50. You've got half the country that don't think we should be locked down at all, and the other half of the country think we should never go out again.
And then the other half, if my maths is...
The third half, yeah.
Yeah, is thinking that it's 5G and it's all a conspiracy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Then you've got all the nutters on it.
And Bill Gates has arranged it all and everything else.
The only good thing about the 5G nonsense is it's brought all the tinfoil hat wearers into one place. And I think they're going to be led by Carol Cadwallader or whatever. But anyway, you always get nutters, unfortunately. But the problem is that you've got these the two distinct things. What amazes me, though, is people can't seem to cope with what the common sense of this is. And it seems to me that the common sense of this is that you have a particularly virulent virus. That's not easy to say.
I like what you said there. Virulent virus.
Virulent virus.
Yeah.
Sounds like some kind of punk band.
Sid Vicious.
Yeah, yeah.
Virulent virus, yeah. His sidekick.
Yeah. You've got this virus that is...
Punky pandemic.
Well, they're not really sure how it's transmitted.
Punky pandemic.
Yeah, yeah.
Virulent virus and punky pandemic is going...
Yeah. That's their lead singer, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
No
hair, because it's been fried off, though, by 5G.
by his 5G mask that he lives under. and the problem is that we're just not being sensible here. You know, everybody's going, you know, do we play rugby with your mum in the park or whatever? You know, it's all just nonsense. The fact is, we're supposed to keep away from each other and not transmit the virus. That's the bottom line of it. Until such time as there's either a vaccine or it's gone through the population and we've built up an immunity to it.
Right, stop there. Would you have a vaccine if it was available very quickly? Would you be happy to have it?
Yeah.
Okay, even if... I mean, I know they've got to do stringent testing. They've done some on monkeys already, haven't they?
Yeah.
But you would be happy to have it, and you'd be happy to give it to your family and little bear and...
People. Yeah, yeah. As far as I'm concerned, there's a risk in everything. All the vaccines that have ever been developed have all worked.
Yeah.
You know, the only controversy over vaccines was when the editor of The Lancet fraudulently published some research from a guy that hadn't done any research into the MMR vaccine. And that caused a huge controversy, except that there's no evidence to say that it actually was the cause of what they said it was. So for me, yes, as long as they've tested it and as long as it's been approved for public use, I would probably have it. And when I say I would probably have it, it all depends at what point they produce it and whether I think I need it. You know, because the thing that we still aren't sure about is once you've had COVID,
get it again? Yeah. So does that make you immune? Yeah, I agree.
So we have two issues. None of us know if we've had it or not.
Yeah.
And if we have had it, we don't know if we've got antibodies that make us immune. So for me, they're the two questions I'd want to ask first. Before I had a vaccine, I'd want to go, well, have I had it?
Personally, I know, I'm sure you do, lots of people that think they had it and are sure they've had it, but they'll never know because they haven't had a test.
Yeah.
So,
although I don't know if you saw a French doctor claim that he went back and tested blood samples that he'd taken in October and November from his patients, and he found some had COVID then.
Last October?
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me. I think it's been hush-hush.
I don't think they hushed it up. I think they just didn't know.
Okay, so... Yeah, they thought it was flu and coughs, and then they suddenly realised.
My mum had a lung infection in December, early January, and that was before all of the COVID thing broke. The doctors prescribed her antibiotics, but they didn't work, and they kept changing the antibiotics because they didn't work, and she was ill for a few weeks, and then she got better. If she had the same symptoms now, they would immediately diagnose COVID.
Yeah.
So who knows? I'm sure it's been around a bit longer than people think it has.
Exactly. There was certainly a cluster in Herne Bay, as I think I told you in our last chat. Going back to Boris's, I was thinking when I watched it, one of the things I was a bit uncertain of was this, you know, you can now drive 5 miles to exercise. No, not 5 miles. You can drive to exercise. Whereas before they said, keep it within 5 miles of your home, I think.
Yeah.
Right. And that worries people in touristy places such as Whitstable, because we were under siege. Any hot day, we were under siege a couple of weeks ago where certain pubs were treating. I don't know if you saw the pictures, they were crammed on the thing. Certain local pubs. And of course, little villages like Mousehole in Cornwall, up in Wales, Lake District. So I think I was a little bit upset that he said that you can now drive, not keeping that 5 mile thing. So what do you think about that? Do you agree with me that, you know, nice tourist areas, like my little fruit monger who's serving people, if a load of people come down on a sunny Saturday or any other day because they're not working, he's going to be breathed on by loads of Londoners or...
Yeah. It's really difficult because on the one hand, you're trying gradually to implement some kind of normality. But the one thing that I won't complain about the government or politicians in general or the public sector or the NHS, the one thing I won't complain about is we don't live in a dictatorship. The way that people carry on is if they've been ordered to do this or ordered to do that. Yes, there are some rules that you shouldn't break, but most of this should come down to common sense.
Yeah, exactly. And protecting yourself and your family. Yeah,
exactly. If I drove over to see you in Tankerton at the weekend and I arrived and there were thousands of people outside your house, I'd just get in my car and go home.
Yeah.
I'm not going there.
Well, also, if you had chicken pox, you wouldn't Yeah. Or if you had, you know, a really bad bad cough and cold or a sickness bug, I wouldn't really appreciate it if you came to see me.
Yeah, so for me, it's about being sensible about what you're doing. And, of course, it like the people that started a conga party at a weekend. They just don't think.
Yeah.
The people react as if 2 metre space is some kind of kryptonite shield.
Yeah, exactly. I've just saw a graph by a German doctor, and I'll send it to you on Twitter. I did retweet it. And he reckons for joggers, it's a 10 metre because of the sway.
And
I mean, if you live where I live on the promenade, Tankerton, first of all, the council allowed about 3-4 years ago, they allowed cyclists. So it's now like a bloody motorway.
Yeah.
Sorry, I swore there, I didn't mean to. So it's, you know, instead of a promenade, it's a very narrow path and, you know, elderly people get, you know, can't hear and they get these bikes just buzzing them. And I actually asked somebody to slow down as they were coming towards me. They were riding 2 abreast and I was walking with a friend, a dog, her dog, a pushchair and her little toddler. So, you know, we're walking, chatting, as you do on a promenade by the sea. And these 2 cyclists, male and female, just came towards us, high speed, and I held my arm out and said, could you please slow down? She said, we're allowed to cycle here. I said, you're also supposed to give way to a pedestrian, you know?
Yeah.
So it is quite scary for elderly people on the promenade. This 10-minute thing is, who knows?
But at the end of the day, we are all dependent on people being sensible. And unfortunately, there's a huge number of people that just aren't sensible. They're selfish. They want to do this, they want to do that. But a lot of it is fueled by stupid media stories.
Yeah,
you know, Piers Morgan was going on this morning about not being able to see his mum. Well, I can't see my mum either. And there's no way I'm going to see my mum until it's safe to do that.
Yeah.
And I don't care what the government tell me or don't tell me, and I don't care what the rules are, I'm not going to go and give my mum a hug because I don't want to give her a virus that could kill her. It's as simple as that. And, you know, I think this is the thing that's annoying me about where we are now. We've got to be a lot more community-spirited about this, as far as I'm concerned. I don't care.
And patient.
Yeah, I don't care what the government are saying. I don't care what the politicians are saying. What I'm saying is we've got the idea is that we shouldn't spread the virus to each other. And we spread that by being too close to people. We spread that by touching things that other people touch. And so we've got to wash our hands, stay apart as far as we can. Personally, I think we should wear a mask if we're out to protect other people, not to protect us, but to protect other people.
Okay, cool. Where are you going to get your masks from?
I've got mine.
I have got some, but I notice in France and other countries, they're actually handing them out at the stations and at the tube stations. And well, I do think the government, they didn't mention it yesterday, and I think they've got to say masks are mandatory on all public transport or any, you know, shops or...
It's interesting, isn't it?
We've all got to wear them. There's no point just three people wearing them.
But again, this is where things aren't as conventional as you always think they are. I'm going to tell you a story now, but you mustn't repeat this. You mustn't tell anyone else.
No, all right. Nobody's listening.
No. A week or so ago, I was offered 200 masks by someone very reputable, yeah? And they weren't trying to rip me off. They were a reasonable price. And they said, do you want to buy some masks? Not only that, we could personalise them. We could put your logo on them.
Oh, yeah, branding. Nice.
Yeah. So I thought, you know what? I'll get some of those with the company logo on.
Yeah.
Through Works. And he said, of course, they're not medical grade. And I suddenly thought, well, hold on a minute. If I start giving out face masks with my logo all over it and somebody gets ill, they're going to sue me.
Yeah.
You know, your mask didn't protect me.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't really understand about these masks, because even if they are medical grade, are they allowed to be washed? What are they made of?
But again, but you see...
Dispose of them straight away. And, you know, are people going to dispose... Are people going to wear them properly?
This is, again, where it comes down to individuals being sensible, isn't it? I don't know if you saw it. It was hilarious. It was in America, for sure. But did you see the woman in a supermarket who queued up to pay for her food in a face mask where she cut out a hole for her nose and her mouth? Yeah. And the guy said, oh, I like your mask. Why have you done that? She said, well, I couldn't breathe with the mask on.
No. Oh, no. That's just...
And you just go, oh, you know, the problem is, you know, somebody's wearing a mask. So what? Where did they get it? What is it? Have they washed it? Is it, you know, who knows? You know, we've got to stop relying on things. And I don't know. I don't know if this is true or not. I'm just thinking, if I was a government, there's a shortage of PPE, yeah? If we start telling people to wear masks, we're going to create a massive demand for masks.
Yeah.
Which we may not be able to satisfy.
Yeah.
People are then going to go, I'm immune now, I've got a mask on. I could go and play football, or, you know, because...
But I think the fact is that it's supposed to protect... So if you wear a mask, it protects me, not you. And if I wear a mask, it protects you, not me. Isn't that it?
Yeah, yeah. Basically, you're supposed to cough into the mask. I mean, it just stops you spitting on somebody else. Yeah.
But once it's got wet, they're no good. Once you've presumably coughed, spluttered in it. And then you've got to be careful how you take it off.
Exactly.
Because my new husband went and got petrol yesterday, because I took him to the woods because it was so windy. I took him to our very local woods, so I didn't drive too far, and we got petrol. And he put gloves on, and then I said to him, you've got to be really careful how you take the gloves off.
Yeah.
And how you dispose of them. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
There is a proper way that medical people take their gloves off.
Yeah, but the only if you talk to a doctor... or a medical professional, they say you shouldn't even wear gloves. The reason they wear gloves in hospital is to prevent cross-contamination, yeah? But the interesting thing, going back to masks, is if you go to the supermarket and watch people stood in the queue, the amount of people that fiddle with their masks... They become pointless because you keep putting your hands all over them.
But then the other rule of thought is that if you wear a mask, you can't touch your face, I've read. So do you know what? It's like Grimm's fairy tales, isn't it? You just don't know. Nobody knows.
I'm in danger of using the word alert, because that seems to be difficult for everyone now. You've got to be aware of what you're doing. For me, it's just about not spreading the virus and not picking it up. So if I touch anything in public, I have a little bottle of...
That's good, yeah.
If I touch anything in public, I wipe my hands with it afterwards.
Yeah.
I try not to touch anything in public. Any, you know, like supermarket trolley handles or whatever, which you can't avoid.
Yeah.
Once I've gone around the supermarket, I wash my hands straight away and then put the food in the car.
Right, let's just talk back, because we're trying to keep this to a certain time for the listeners of the Business Bunker. Going back to what Boris said, Paul, on last night at 7 p.m, the builders and construction, he very much wants them to go back to help the economy, and I get that.
Yeah.
I immediately thought, he asked them, please to use a car, please don't use public transport. So these builders going up to London, for example, from Kent, or going wherever they're going on a job, are going to be sharing a van, aren't they? They're not going to be just all going up on their own to Clapham or Chelsea or Knightsbridge or wherever they're working on site. They are going to share a van, most probably, which could spread. And then also, what are the hand washing facilities, I wondered, on site? Are they going to be sharing a loo? 10 right. blokes, 5 blokes? How does that work?
Right.
What are your thoughts?
Well, two things there. On last week's show, I read out the distancing for construction sites. And all of that is in the guidelines. How many toilets you have, how much social distancing there is. On a construction site, it's now a health and safety requirement to have hand sanitizer posts. Yeah. So all of that is in the guidelines already. And I'm sure they're going to be moving the guidelines on. But I want to make a point here. Because a lot of people after last night said, oh, everyone's going to go back to work this week. No, they're not.
Exactly. People were going mad. They were saying, it was so ridiculous. They were saying, oh, he's only given us 12 hours notice, you know. It's ridiculous. He never said. He said, you can, you know.
Yeah. But here's the point that people have completely overlooked. Construction sites have been open all the way through this. They've never closed. Some companies chose to shut their site, but that it was never a requirement. Therefore, all the people that aren't at work, that are construction workers, are at home having been furloughed.
Yeah.
Well, the furloughs are done month on month.
Yeah.
We're halfway through.
They've signed up for...
signed up for May. You can't go back to work.
Yeah.
You can't go back to work until the end of May, because you've already been paid not to go to work.
Yeah, exactly. I agree, and that there was a lot of...
we're having a lovely... it's a shame this can't be seen on the radio, but Jules is now on her fifth act.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I decided to play a little trick on you today to see how long it would take you to notice.
And, I can go through all the things you want. You had a woolly bobble hat. You had an England baseball cap, and now you've got some straw monstrosity. It's got holes for a donkey's ears or something.
It's like Topo Gigi, this one, isn't it? Oh, well, you're so clever, because you just kept completely deadpan. And I said to my new husband, he said, what are all those? I said, I'm just going to have a very sensible conversation. But you know my character. I do like to mess around, and especially with you. But very good, because you just kept the conversation. Because I thought, well, should I? Because we'll be talking about very serious things. But
I've been watching you change hats, and I'm just thinking it's stupid. Yeah.
You didn't blink. You didn't. You did not stray. Yeah. You didn't stutter. Okay. So last and not least, let's round up, because we're sticking to our little schedule of time. Hospitality. He mentioned July.
Yeah.
I can see that some hotels possibly could open in July, but are they going to make guests eat in their rooms?
But the problem I have, and this is what is driving me nuts with the media, because no one's investigating this, no one's thinking about it, no one's really talking about it. And these are the things we need to talk about, as far as I'm concerned, is how do you half open a hotel?
Yeah.
How do you half open a restaurant?
Yeah.
It's not possible. You know, people are talking about having restaurants where you can eat outside. I was at Oscar's, a Turkish restaurant in Tenterton, on Saturday night. Mustafa, who owns it, is doing takeaways, yeah? And he's got a patio outside, which is lovely on a summer's evening.
Yeah.
And I just said to him, Mustafa, if they let you open on a patio, what would you do? He said, nothing. I wouldn't open.
Why?
Because he needs 100 covers.
To make it.
And he can only put 20 people outside. And that's the problem. That, you know, you can't half open something because it will cost you more than being closed.
Very, very tough. Yeah, exactly. And the same, you know, same for think of where we must talk to Robert Richardson and Dan San Giuseppe. I must do that on SCOF. That's my task of this week. But because you can't, as you say, you can't have six staff. You've got to have front desk. You've got to have bookings. Yeah. You've got to have someone taking bookings. And the thing is, if we get a second wave, which is quite possible, you could just open, you get all your supplies in, buy all the food.
Yeah.
Tell all your guests they've got to go. And I also, I was expecting Boris to say something about the, you know, he's talking about quarantining people when they come in. And quite frankly, I think it's about time he did. And I wish that they'd done it earlier because I know people that have been flying in from all over the place.
Sure.
But the very mentioning of that, but not giving a, not doing it immediately. So people are going to be going, quit, you know. Get over to the UK because they're going to quarantine.
Mm.
I also know I don't know whether I should say this, but I do know some people who are not English. They don't pay tax here. They don't work here. They're quite wealthy and they've had tests. They've had a coronavirus test because they're going back to their own country.
Yeah.
And they don't want to give it to their family. So I was a bit miffed because I thought, well, you don't pay national insurance, you don't pay for the NHS, but you're having it done in England to go back to your country, and yet people can't get tested. You know, health professionals can't get tested. So somewhere along the line, these tests are not being, let's say, done properly, or people aren't having the due...
I think it's like anything, you know. It's where command and control breaks down. When you try and do anything from a central position for an entire country, loads of things are going to fall through the cracks because you can't manage it like that, which is why I'm a great believer in managing it bottom up. If you went to each local authority or each NHS trust or whatever and said, right, here's the resources, you organise it, you stand a much better chance of covering everybody. But with all the will in the world, no matter which politicians are in power, I would not wish it on anyone.
My goodness, that's right. I mean, I used to feel sorry for Theresa May with the Brexit thing. She didn't stand a chance. And now Boris is, he's still recovering from COVID.
Yeah.
He's had a new baby. He's doing Brexit. And like you say, whoever was in power would just, you know, we can all say we would have done it this way, that way and the other. It's an unknown disease.
Hindsight's brilliant. All these people keep telling you what you should do. When you actually go and look at their Twitter feeds, they never mentioned it at the time.
Yeah.
They're all mentioning it now, but they never mentioned it then. And, you know, we have to hold the government to account. They have to be responsible for what's happened. But we also have to be sensible about this, that says each and every one of us has to take the sensible approach to what we're doing. We have to think about what we're doing and how it affects everybody else. And the more we do that, the more likely we are to recover from this in reasonable shape.
I agree. So from Paul Andrews and myself, Jules Serkin, we're wishing you all to stay safe, keep washing your hands, and, stay alert, of course. Don't go to a crowd. And mask, well, let's discuss that next week, shall we?
Yeah.
About maybe. Whether we should be, I do think that we should be wearing masks, but there's no point unless everybody has one.
Yeah. But again, it's a person.
And how do we get them?
Yeah. Well, you can buy them on Amazon, to be honest. But
yeah, you can. I've got some. But I still think unless everybody has them, unless everybody is, you know, like I said, do you wash them? Do you dispose of them? People aren't going to spend 40 quid on masks or whatever and then just throw one away a day. Some people won't. They'll just keep using it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think we should stop. I love talking to you. Well, let's carry on off the record, but I'll stop the recording because this is for the Business Bunker. So from Paul and I, speak to you next week.
Bye.
That was The World According to Jules and Me. So we're kind of at the end of another show. I want to say a huge thank you to our two guests, Joanne Taylor from Fit for Trade and Ella Brocklebank from Jenna's Group. Thank you so much. To our sponsors, Thackeray Williams Solicitors, thank you for supporting us. Thank you to everybody that tweeted and emailed. We'll be back with another show next week. Please stay safe, everybody. Keep your social distance, wash your hands, and stay safe. We really need you to stay safe. Thank you for joining us. Tune in to the Business Bunker show next Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Well, I'll have two more guests and a bit of a rant with Jules, and we'll see from there as we enter what will be week 9 next week. So thank you for joining us. Stay safe. See you all soon. Bye for now.
This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.